Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and you're listening to the Jazz on the Tube podcast. And today I want to thank the great Michael Lazaroff of Entertainment Cruise Productions, also known as, what's their other name? They do the Jazz Cruise, the Great Jazz Cruises. He puts out a weekly newsletter, which is excellent. And he alerted me to something in this newsletter that I wasn't aware of and am very happy to know about, which is that the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in addition to being one of the great basketball players of all time, is also a great scholar on the Central Avenue jazz scene, which I did not know. And if you don't know Central Avenue, you know, every city in America, or many cities in America, New York, of course, Boston, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Indianapolis, Chicago, you know, you name it, San Francisco had a thriving jazz scene. And one of the biggest scenes of all time was Central Ave, because, of course, L.A. is the big, big city in California, and it just attracted a ton of great musicians. And these scenes are very important. They're very important for understanding the history of jazz and for appreciating jazz more, because you can kind of get a sense of who came out of what scene. You know, for instance, two of my favorite musicians are Angelinos. That would be Charles Mingus and Eric Dolphy. It's not a coincidence they played together. They both came up in Los Angeles. Anyway, there's a wonderful article that came out about a year ago in the Los Angeles Times. Long piece. We're going to put a link to it. But in the meantime, I'm going to read the beginning of it just to sort of whet your appetite. And I want to strongly encourage you to go read this thing. And if anybody knows Kareem, I would love to interview him about his research. We've done shows on Boston. We've done shows on Pittsburgh. We've done shows on Detroit. And we've done shows on this huge, oversized impact of Texas musicians on the development of blues and jazz. It's really one of the untold stories. And I'd love to add Kareem's insights on L.A. He'd be the ideal guy because he's clearly done his homework. So let me read this thing. Very exciting. I mean, I knew he was a jazz fan, and I've actually seen him at the Blue Note in New York, but it's just great to read this article. So thanks to the Los Angeles Times for publishing this. And it starts out with this quote: "Central was like a river, a mighty river, like the Amazon or the Nile, or in this case, the Congo. And all the streets were tributaries that branched off from this great river." Clifford King Solomon, jazz musician. So now we're going to hear from Kareem directly. "My first exposure to the influence of jazz on Los Angeles was in 1965 when I was a freshman attending UCLA. Edgar Lacey, a junior and fellow player on the basketball team, took me to the IT Club to see John Coltrane. As a teenage jazz enthusiast growing up in New York City, I had listened to all of Coltrane's records. Jazz was the soundtrack to my life." Let me read that again. This is from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. "Jazz was the soundtrack to my life." For how many of us is that true? "It was in my blood, thanks to my father, who was a transit cop by day, but by night a Juilliard-trained musician who played trombone with many of the jazz greats and introduced me to my childhood heroes like Thelonious Monk and Miles Davis." I got to go on a little side note. Kareem's father was also a war hero, and one of the things he did was he was part of the troops that liberated some of the camps, the slave labor camps in Germany. And he saved a young boy who went on to become a very famous and important rabbi. It's an interesting story. Anyway, back to the article by Kareem. "I had also spent a summer in a high school journalism class in Harlem, researching and writing about the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s and 1930s, when the greatest African-American lions of politics, art, literature, and jazz roared loud enough to make black voices heard around the world. And the world, having never heard black voices so clear, so engaging, so vibrant, was forever changed because of it. I know I was. Their passion to speak their truths gave me the courage to do the same. But while my 18-year-old self was sitting with my friends in the swinging IT Club, listening to Coltrane's soulful saxophone seduce the crowd with impressions, and I want to talk about you, I had no idea how significant jazz was to the history of African Americans in Los Angeles. In my heart, I was still a child of New York City, an apostle of its rich history, energetic community, and vital lifestyle. Although I spent college and most of my NBA career in Los Angeles, it wasn't until I retired from basketball and began my second career as a writer specializing in American history and the nuances of popular culture that I learned how one area, Central Avenue, played a vital role in shaping both African American history and American popular culture. It was a revelation and an inspiration. But why had it taken me so long to hear about this amazing past that Angelenos should have been bragging about the way they tout their television, movie, and rock heritage? Why was this particular past, which influenced so much of Los Angeles' identity, ignored, neglected, and buried? And I'm going to do a little sidebar on this. If you really want to understand Los Angeles, it's Mississippi with palm trees. Think through that. Think that one through. The likelihood that the people that rule and run Los Angeles are going to give credit to African Americans for anything is maybe today, but certainly not in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and 2000s. But anyway, R.J. Smith explained this selective memory in his poetic and incisive book, The Great Black Way, L.A. in the 1940s and the Lost African American Renaissance. Los Angeles is the capital of forgetting. It is a place so fixated on tomorrows or so set on seemingly brand new, we do the future. Until recently, we barely accepted we had a past. The past is what many of us came here to escape. I'll be honest, I think my explanation is a little clearer. I don't think there's a poetic explanation for why this important cultural mecca in the history of American music has not yet gotten its due. And that is a beautiful map. I love maps that show where the spots are. You know, we had a wonderful interview, not because of me, but because of the guy I was interviewing, Cisco Bradley, who did a wonderful book, beautiful book, beautiful. I hope everybody gets it, on the great bassist William Parker. And one of the great things about Cisco's book is he has street maps that show you where were the jazz clubs and music clubs in the Bronx in the 60s and 70s when William Parker was growing up. That's kind of interesting to know. He then did another chart, another map that showed where the lofts and jazz spots were in the East Village and Soho in the 70s and 80s. That's just really useful stuff. So anyway, there's a map that accompanies this article that shows Central Ave and shows, you know, where some of the clubs, not all of them, were located, which is just neat. By the way, we also did a call on the San Francisco jazz scene, which was substantial as well, also written out of history. I actually lived on Fillmore Street, and believe it or not, I was the only person raving, and this was in the early 90s, about Fillmore's jazz history. Now I think it's a little bit better understood, and one of my colleagues actually wrote a book about it, and I interviewed him and his co-author about it. All right, so let me just skip ahead here. So Kareem goes, I became so fascinated with my deep dive into all things Central Avenue that I began to develop a noir TV series called Trouble Man that set in the district during the late 1940s. Nothing proves I've become a true Californian more than developing a TV series. It would combine my love of 70s-style blaxploitation movies and the 40s era's hard-boiled detectives, the golden age of Hollywood gangsters, and of course jazz, and a mostly black cast. The stories would reflect how the post-war World War II struggles of Central Avenue gave rise to everything from the civil rights movement to the birth of rock and roll, and the soundtrack would naturally be jazz. I would love to see that show. I hope it happens. So let me be your guide through the historic Central Avenue that I came to know, love, and revere during my many months of research. There's so much more to see than I could possibly show you on this short trip through time, so I'll focus on the most important sites. Oh, this is touching. So here's a quote. Paris is lovely, and it is beautiful. It is lush and wonderful, but I would gladly trade it all for a corner at 41st Street and Central Ave. And that's from John Kinloch, poet and journalist for the California Eagle, who, shortly after writing this, died on the front lines in World War II. Central Avenue runs And by the way, I'm reading from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's Los Angeles Times article. The link's below. I hope everybody will read it. It's way longer than I can read the whole thing for, but I want to give you a flavor of it because this is such, you know, I always say that the food tastes better when you know who grew the okra, you know, and who, you know, what the recipe was and the history of the recipe. And so the more you know about where this music actually came from, the better. And as I've said a lot, and we got to talk about in depth with Cisco Bradley, we experience a lot of the music in a disembodied way. We used to hear it from LPs or on the radio or now streaming on the internet, but it's not coming from the ozone. It's coming from human beings. And the more we know about these human beings, the more impressive the whole story becomes. So Central Avenue runs north-south like a soldier's spine through the center of Los Angeles. From the 1920s to the 1950s, these bustling blocks were the thumping heart of the Afro-American community. As in most American cities, informal segregation turned the black neighborhoods into a city within a city where locals shopped, conducted businesses, filled prescriptions, got fillings, made last wills and testaments. It was a black ecosystem where whites ventured only to sample the lively jazz clubs that featured some of the world's best musicians. And I got to do another sidebar. A lot of these neighborhoods were destroyed by so-called urban renewal. Fillmore is a classic example, but New Orleans had a very thriving, beautiful African-American district that was gutted, just gutted by a superhighway. Among the famous whites who frequented the Central Avenue clubs were Howard Hughes. How do you like that? Bing Crosby, Ava Gardner, Humphrey Bogart, Marilyn Monroe, and W.C. Fields. The nightlife wasn't all floor shows and jazz. If you knew where to go, there was gambling, drugs, and prostitution. In 1920, at the start of Central Avenue's rise, the city's black population was only about 15,579, 3% of the nearly 600,000 people of Los Angeles. The second great migration followed World War II, with thousands of African Americans leaving Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Texas to come to California, hoping for factory jobs needed to help the war effort. And yeah, that, you know, we know about people moving north to Chicago and New York and to Detroit and Pittsburgh. But believe me, there was a huge migration going west too. And a lot from Texas, a lot from Louisiana and Oklahoma. By 1940, Los Angeles's black population had quadrupled to 63,700. In 1950, when Central Avenue's glorious flame had started to flicker out, Los Angeles had over 4 million people, 217,881 of whom were black. The 30-year heyday of Central Avenue was in part the result of the influx of these hundreds of thousands of new people and their vibrant culture. And as another sidebar, I want to say also for a lot of these folks, it was their first opportunity, you know, for good employment, good housing, and good schools for their children. And we've talked about this when we talk about Pittsburgh and Detroit and why those cities produced so many incredible musicians. That music was always there. It's just there was no opportunity for people to develop it, you know, to get the kind of training that music requires. And so we had that beautiful moment in time where we had music education in the schools and there were, you know, infinite opportunities for kids to play. And that's why we had all the great musicians that we had. I'm going to just jump ahead here. Jelly Roll Morton played to full houses between 1917 and 1922 at the Cadillac Cafe on Central Avenue. That brought in celebrities. Said Morton, "We didn't have anything but movie stars at the Cadillac Cafe as long as I played there." He was so good at self-promotion. Central Avenue thrived. Club Alabama, The Downbeat, The Last Word, the Dunbar Hotel, and others hosted the most famous and soon to be famous black entertainers in the world. Nat King Cole, Lionel Hampton, Duke Ellington, Charles Mingus, Charlie Parker, Dinah Washington, and dozens of others. The avenue became known as Brown Broadway. This is what it looked like to a reporter from the California Eagle, California's largest and most influential black newspaper. Big modern office buildings, elbowing tumble-down shacks, eat-in shops in rows, chicken markets, missions, speakeasies, black frock ministers, flashily dressed furtivide racketeers, ladies of the evening, patrolling in daylight, big cars whiz recklessly, cutouts wide open, colored and white school children arm in arm, no race hatred yet. And if you know, we I live across the river from a city. I got to do sidebars, you know, it's my thing. I live across the river from a city called Kingston. And there was a neighborhood also. I mean, it was beautiful. It could have been the Soho of the Hudson Valley. But they decided to do a little urban renewal. And they destroyed absolutely beautiful, irreplaceable buildings and infrastructure and replaced them with crap. But anyway, you see pictures of that era, and it was completely integrated neighborhood, blacks, whites, friends, kids playing together, socializing, completely normal, you know, completely, it was the way of life. It was the way of life, and you can see it in the archival pictures from when this neighborhood still existed. So I want to repeat that. Colored and white school children, arm in arm, no race hatred yet, secondhand stores, gilded emporiums, colored banks, a wonderful colored life insurance building, colored gas stations, a score of colored drugstores. That gives a great visual sense of the street's lifestyle. But if you really want to feel its kinetic energy, sense of joy and hope, listen to Lionel Hampton's thumping Central Avenue breakdown. So I'm quoting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's quoting a reporter from that era, talking about what the neighborhood looked like. And lots of black-owned businesses. I know I'm more familiar, obviously, with where I used to live on the Fillmore, hotels, restaurants, you know, all kinds of businesses, nightclubs, and all destroyed, all taken by eminent domain and ground into the dirt. That's basically what they did. I don't know what happened in Central Avenue, but that's what happened in San Francisco, and I know that happened in New Orleans as well. So anyway, I'm going to stop reading this thing. I'm going to put the link below. I totally, strongly, strongly recommend that you read it. I'm looking at pictures of Billie Holiday singing at the Dunbar Hotel. I'm looking at Duke Ellington performing at the Mayan Theater, which is in Los Angeles. We got, who else? It goes on and on and on. Got a lot of R&B guys, Earl Bostic and Joe Houston or Houston. And who else do we have here? Some singing groups. Here's a picture of a huge lineup of people waiting to get into the Dunbar Hotel to hear some music. The Lincoln Theater, which was called the West Coast Apollo. How do you like that? How do you like that? And on it goes. Oh, he's even put a playlist together. How do you like that? Okay. So now you really got to listen to this thing. So the link's below. Learn about our scenes. Learn the history. It's one of the many, many delights of getting to know jazz better is getting to know where the music was created and the circumstances under which it was created. So that's Jazz in the Tube. I hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.